Ladies and gentlemen, theys and thems, weavers of all races and subclasses, welcome to This Dungeon is Occupied. My name is Illidine, and together with Thorn and Bone Daddy as your hosts, we wish to help you as players and game masters, from the aspiring to the veteran, with questions, ideas, and interviews for your next tabletop role-playing game experience. Hello, and welcome to another episode of This Dungeon is Occupied podcast. We are going to be talking about the Sorcerer class and its subclasses from the Player's Handbook, trademarked by WotC, not us.
At all.
Yeah, don't hate us. Don't add us. So sorcerers, I'm going to read just the last paragraph of the intro flavor text, because it's kind of, the most important. Sorcerers carry a magical birthright conferred upon them by an exotic bloodline, some otherworldly influence, or exposure to unknown cosmic forces. One can't study sorcery as one learns a language, any more than one can learn to live a legendary life. No one chooses sorcery. The power chooses the sorcerer. So basically, you know, I didn't choose the hood. The hood chose me. I was hoping I'd get somebody.
Perfect.
They're going to cancel us.
Oh, my God. I haven't been canceled. It's one of my, bucket list items.
To be canceled?
Robbie's going to be trying to be canceled on his deathbed. Somebody please cancel me.
He's going to say something overtly racist right as he's dying, just because. All right, so first things first, the mechanics of a sorcerer. You get a d6 for your hit die. You don't get any armor for efficiencies, because why would you? Your weapons, you get daggers, darts, slings, quarterstaffs, light crossbows. You don't get any tools. Your saving throws are, you're proficient in constitution and charisma. Your skills, you get to choose two from arcana, deception, insight, intimidation, persuasion, and religion. And then you get your starting equipment, which is on page 101. We won't have to go through that, because...
Well, you can get an arcane focus. You can put a gem in your forehead.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Bone Daddy, do you want to start talking about spell casting? Because you're the one that likes magic so much.
I do love magic. So with any good magic user, you get your spell casting feature. You're a full caster, so you do get your starting cantrips, and you can pull from a sorcerer's spell list. Also, on your first level, you get two first level spells from the sorcerer's spell list, and each and as you go up, you get, you get a spell for per each level that you go up. Let me see, one sorcerer spells level. Yeah, so you gain more as you level up. So anything after first level, you receive more spell slots. You can cast more powerful spells. Your spell casting ability is going to be your charisma modifier. So your warlocks, you pull from your charisma, because you have to be charismatic to cast spell. That was the only thing that was really confusing with sorcerers, is because you need to be charismatic to cast spells. I guess, even though you're born with them, but that's one thing or the other. It's your charisma modifier plus your proficiency bonus is your spell attack modifier, and you also get your spell save DC is your charisma modifier, your proficiency bonus, and that's +8. Just like any other standard spellcaster. And you also get a spellcasting focus that you can use for your sorcerer spells, which, again, don't take the place of a consumable item. Looking at you, people who like to cast without consuming a diamond, if you haven't had that that anxiety from not having a diamond and trying to raise your dead teammate back up, have you truly lived?
Yes, I have.
Because you brought the diamond.
Well, it's because we don't do magic users quite as much. We don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
If I die, I die.
If he dies, he dies.
I die.
So, Thorn, do you want to take the spell slots, the font of magic?
Well, let's not skip over a sorcerer's origins first.
I didn't.
I had mine. That's first.
Oh, that's before. Weird.
Well, don't you choose your sorcerer's origin before you start dealing with the font of magic?
It's because you choose it at the beginning. Just like a warlock, you have... So sorcerers and warlocks are pretty cool because at the beginning you get to choose like your mainstay ability, like your like point of reference. No, not... Is it warlocks that get it also? They get their patron at the beginning too?
Yeah, they get a patron.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have access to like much more powerful abilities at the beginning of the game. So sorcerers are really cool at the beginning. Like if you're playing the first level sorcerer, they have like access to some really, really cool abilities also with warlocks.
So what you're saying is that magic users are only good at level one?
No, what I'm saying is that magic users are good for all. I don't know what you're like smashing things with your hammers and your swords when I can just wave my fingers and levitate a rock or something.
You know, throw jazz hands in there. What? Jazz hands.
Press the digitation.
That's like Scanlan's hand.
Oh my god.
Scanlan's hand.
You know, we just give you crap because you react to it. You know that, right?
I do, but I mean it's fine. It's fair because I don't play magic users well either. So when we're playing magic user, when I'm playing a magic user with each of you, it's like I die so quickly.
Yes. It's because you try to do way too much. For using magic users early is you stay in the back.
Yeah.
You don't go forward. Why? Because you're really easy to hit and you're kind of squishy like a marshmallow.
I am, but what am I if I'm not like a wizard that wants to frontline with his quarterstaff?
You're a melted marshmallow. Yes.
You don't get a frontline with a wizard till like level 17.
So, bringing it back in.
Sorcerer's origin. Okay, you get to choose a sorcerer's origin which describes the source of your innate magical power. As Bone Daddy so lovely put it earlier, your mom slept with a dragon. Draconic bloodline or wild magic. Both, they're detailed later, but basically is you have draconic or wild magic. Wild magic, you just have to roll a die to see if your spell goes absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's like unfathomable power and teeny tiny living space.
No, that's a genie.
No trademark.
At all.
So, but, font of magic.
Yes.
At second level, you tap into a deep wellspring of magic within yourself. This wellspring is represented by sorcery points, which allow you to create a variety of magical effects. So your sorcery points, you get two sorcery points, and you gain more as you reach higher levels, which there's a chart on page 100 of the PHB, of the Player's Handbook. You can never have more sorcery points than shown on the table for your level. You regain all spent sorcery points when you finish a long rest, which gives you quite a nice option, which is the flexible casting. You can use a sorcery point to gain additional spell slots or sacrifice a spell slot to gain additional sorcery points.
Which is super
cool. Yeah, because it does give you a lot more flexibility, especially more so than a wizard, for instance, because a wizard, once they use a spell slot, if they don't have a scroll or a magic item, that's it. They have to take their rest to get their spell slots back. Warlocks and sorcerers are a little more flexible in that nature. But creating spell slots, you can transform unexpended sorcery points into one spell slot as a bonus action on your turn. The creating spell slots table shows the cost of creating a spell slot of a given level. You can create spell slots no higher in level than fifth level. And then any spell slot you create vanishes when you finish a long rest. But you get all your stuff back anyway, so it doesn't matter. So just really quick, first level costs two sorcery points, and then it goes from first to fifth. It's 2 points, 3 points, 5 points, six, and then 7 points. Converting a spell slot to sorcery points as a bonus action on your turn, you can expend one spell slot and gain a number of sorcery points equal to the slot's level. So you just look at the chart and go vice versa. Bone Daddy, do you want to take meta magic?
I would love to take meta magic.
I know you would.
Meta magic is so cool. So at third level, you gain the ability to twist your spells to suit your needs. You gain two of the following meta magic items or options of your choice. You gain another one at 10th and 17th level. You can use one meta magic option on a spell when you cast it, unless otherwise noted. Meta magic is basically a sorcerers have like cheat codes for spells, and they're like, you know what? Let me just make the spell stronger, or extend the spell's range, or heighten the spell's power, like, or even like double the spell, like for the twin spelled one. There's a full list of them. I'm going to go over them briefly, but I'm not going to read through the whole things because we'd be here all day, because meta magic has tons of them. But you'd have the careful spell, which is essentially being able to think of it as being able to cast a spell that requires saving throws and your opponents won't get hit by, or your teammates won't get hit by it. The distance spell increases the distance of your spells. The empowered spell increases your power of your spells. The extended spell makes spell times a lot longer. So a typical 8-hour spell could extend all the way up to 24 hours. Your heightened spell makes it harder for creatures to resist your spells. Your quickened spell allows you to cast a spell that would normally take an action as a bonus action. Your subtle spell allows you to cast spells without saying anything. That's awesome. And then your twin spells allows you to arc your spells off into, instead of one beam, there's two. So
yeah, of those, I think the subtle spell and the twin spell are like my favorites.
Subtle spell is really versatile, considering one of the best ways I can think to shut down a wizard is to cast silence. And so subtle spell allows you to cast it without any verbal components, so you don't have to worry
or about somatic
or somatic components also.
So it's a silent spell.
It's a silent spell, which means that the wizard can't see you casting the spell. So they can't counterspell it. That's the one thing you can get around counterspell, really, other than another counterspell.
Also, you're at like, say you're playing a game of intrigue. One of my favorite things to do is to use a sorcerer and subtle spell, because you don't want people knowing you're casting spells.
Yeah. At
the dinner table.
Very rude. Because it's rude.
Because it's rude.
Yeah. But, you know, that's also something that would be really fun, is playing a sorcerer as if it was a barbarian or even just a fighter, and going in there with your quarterstaff or a dagger or a sword, and then using subtle spell only. So it's like I feint an attack with my weapon, but I'm casting this spell. So it would be a series of like stealth rolls or maybe deception checks. To feint, you know, a attack with your sword as your like quote unquote focus for your spell, and then using subtle spells so that it's like I slashed my sword and it looked like it missed, but suddenly he's on fire. You know, I think it could be fun. I kind of want to make a character like that now.
Twin spell is super cool too, because yeah. It takes your like. Your scorching, but it takes like any kind of beam that you have and turns it into two. Like, hey, you want to know what's better than two beams or better than one beam? Two beams.
Yeah, and I mean tactfully that in combat that just means that you get an extra target, right? And I think it's you can do it. Can you only do it once, or can you? Do it multiple times if you expend sorcery points.
I believe you can.
No, it's just the one time. You spend a number of sorcery points equal to the spell's level to target a second creature in range with the same spell. But it's still cool, because I mean, if you're going against like a pack of goblins or something, it's nice to be able to hit two at a time. One, yeah. it goes through combat a whole lot faster. And two, it protects your friends. So yeah. But now we get to the good stuff. This is the good stuff for me. I like the Sorceress Origins, especially the Draconic Bloodline. I really like it.
Go for it.
So really quick, though, we did skip two things. The ability score improvements. If you don't choose a feat, you can do your ability score improvements at 4th, 8th, 12th, and 16th, and 19th level. And then at level 20, you get Sorceress Restoration, which you regain 4 expended sorcery points whenever you finish a short rest. So you get more spells.
Sorcerers get like front load a lot of their abilities with their like Sorceress Origin. So that's why there isn't a lot of like abilities to choose from with just the sorcerer, you know? So you'll get a lot of your main abilities from the origin that you pick.
Yeah. So Draconic Bloodline, your innate magic comes from draconic magic that was mingled with your blood or that of your ancestors. Most often sorcerers with this origin trace their descent back to a mighty sorcerer of ancient times who made a bargain with a dragon or who might even have claimed a dragon parent. Some of these bloodlines are well established in the world, but most are obscure. Any given sorcerer could be the first of a new bloodline as a result of a pact or some other exceptional circumstance. First of all, love that last sentence because that gives a lot of RP options and plot hooks.
Yeah.
Because your character could be the first of its bloodline. You can make that backstory where it's, I'm making a pact with an ancient dragon. Why? Because I want the power. So at first level, you get dragon ancestor. You can choose one type of dragon as your ancestor, and the damage type associated with each dragon is used by features you gain later. So not going to run through the whole list, but like if you choose a black dragon's ancestry, your damage type is acid. If you choose a white dragon, it's cold damage. If you choose gold, it's fire, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You can speak, read, and write draconic. And additionally, whenever you make a charisma check when interacting with dragons, your efficiency bonus is doubled if it applies to the check. RP. It's all the RP.
Yeah, yeah, and who doesn't like a proficiency bonus going up for anything?
Exactly. Yes.
It's all in the roll. So next is Draconic Resilience. As magic flows through your body, it causes physical traits of your dragon ancestors to emerge. At first level, your hit point maximum increases by 1 and increases by 1 again whenever you gain a level in this class. Additionally, parts of your skin are covered by a thin sheen of dragon-like scales when you aren't wearing armor. Your AC equals 13 plus your dexterity modifier. I kind of like it. It's not psoriasis, it's dragon scales. And basically, it's instead of 12 plus your dexterity modifier is 13, so you get a little bit of innate natural armor, but it's only when you're not wearing armor. That's the only drawback I can see from it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's flavorful. I like it. I mean, if you don't like, you know, the dragon scales, you can always throw on some leather armor or something, but you're not going to have proficiency with it. So it won't be as good, but still, I mean, you're a sorcerer anyway. Like Thorne said, you're kind of in the background anyway until higher levels. So having the extra AC, that's really awesome. You want to take Elemental Affinity?
Elemental Affinity. Starting at 6th level, you cast a spell that deals damage of the type associated with your draconic ancestry. You can add your charisma modifier to one damage roll of that spell. At the same time, you can spend one sorcery point to gain resistance to the damage type for 1 hour. So that's pretty versatile, allowing you to deal damage. So that's cool if you are able to kind of Pokemon it. Like you're like, oh yeah, you're weak to this. So you can deal, or things that need you to deal frost damage or fire damage to them in order to hurt them. This comes in handy a lot because you can turn your spell into an ice spell or a fire spell or an acid spell, depending on what your dragon type is. And at the same time, you can spend one sorcery point to gain resistance. So that's pretty cool also. You can turn yourself resistant to fire, resistant to ice. So
when your story weaver, like myself, throws an ancient red dragon at you, you at least get half damage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still going to be a lot, but you get half. It's okay. My favorite part is level 14. I think I would only play a sorcerer if I knew that we were going into the higher levels later on. Because there's a lot more fun things at the end of their loadout, which is kind of counterintuitive to the other classes that we've talked about. Because like rogues, they shine really well, like really early. They get some cool stuff at the end, but all of it's at the beginning. This, the sorcerers, I like this one. At 14th level, you get dragon wings. You gain the ability to sprout a pair of dragon wings from your back, gaining a fly speed equal to your current speed. You can create these wings as a bonus action on your turn. They last until you dismiss them as a bonus action on your turn. That, there's no duration. It just, you create the wings as a bonus action on your turn. They last until you dismiss them as a bonus action. You can't manifest your wings while wearing armor unless the armor is made to accommodate them, and clothing not made to accommodate your wings might be destroyed when you manifest them. That's easy because you have your draconic resilience and you're not wearing armor anyway. It's just fun to me to have a character that you're like, hey, I want to fly. Cool. I've got dragon wings now. Mm-hmm. And you could do some, like, I see body horror opportunities here. I see very like horrific transformations. It doesn't necessarily have to feel good.
That's true.
That's just the darker side of my D&D, I guess.
My favorite's probably the last one. Draconic presence.
Ooh.
Beginning at 18th level, you can channel the dread presence of your dragon ancestor, causing those around you to become awestruck or frightened. As an action, you can spend 5 sorcery points to draw on this power and exude an aura of awe or fear, your choice, to a distance of 60 feet for 1 minute or until you lose concentration, as if you were casting a concentration spell. Each hostile creature that starts its turn in this aura must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or be charmed if you choose awe, or frightened if you choose fear, until the aura ends. A creature that succeeds on a saving throw is immune to your aura for 24 hours. Draconic fear is a lot of really big campaigns are based on rather ancient dragons that this aura of fear is a big part of trying to fight them.
Yeah.
And it can cause all sorts of havoc. Yeah. If you just sit in a group and just exude fear.
Yeah. And at 18th level, you have 18 sorcery points. 5 is not that hard to spend. Like I could do that all the live long day.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So thoughts about Draconic Bloodline?
Thorn? It's really cool. I mean, I think it's cool. So
that's it. You just think it's cool.
Well, no, I'm stuck on something you said. Right. And like I was thinking about it, so it made me really like excited. And so like my brain was like, oh wait, oh that's right. What my final thoughts? Oh no, I was thinking about the body horror aspect of it. I was like, what if somebody like accidentally got made into like an emissary for like a dragon, and like their bodies like can't adjust to the draconic power flowing through them. So what happens is like their scales sprout out of their skin and like tear out of their flesh. And it's both painful and protects them. And then whenever they cast spells, especially dragon based spells, their body can't compensate for like the magic use. So like say they're casting like Ray of Frost, their fingers turn black or purple from the ice that's coming out of them, or their veins pop out for like spells that let them deal extra damage, and like their wings sprout out, like their spine sprouts out when their wings come out, and like skin kind of grows on it instead of sprouting like magically.
Yeah, I definitely like the opportunities we have for the like just the not even RP at this point. It's just the story and the descriptiveness of the character. I mean, because you like what you were saying with the spells and having like the dragon wings pop out. I mean, that you could even have it to where the dragon wings going off of your idea, the dragon wings, maybe the first time that they happen on a trigger, and maybe he or she is falling and the dragon wings pop out, or during combat they need to get across, you know, further than what they could walk, and so they fly a little bit, or fly up into like a second story of a tavern or something and do spells from the window, but have it as a surprise instead of I chose to do these dragon wings. Like your story weaver could say like, oh, this is a triggering event, your wings pop out, and then explain the if you're doing the body horror aspect, go through the body horror of the wings sprouting from their shoulder blades and you know, tearing the scales apart, and it could be so much fun. I want to make one. Robbie, do a campaign so I could play a fucking sorcerer.
Or the one I was thinking was with their dragon wings also, like their hand splits like from finger to finger and like elongates, and so the wings sprout from there. Like their hands just split in five ways, and so like, their thumb like comes up here, and it's really grotesque. And that's what draconic presence is. When you get a draconic presence, it's just you become more draconic, but you're like, it's like body horror. So like things are just popping out. That's why people are frightened.
That's why people are afraid. You're like, that's a good idea. Everywhere. Yeah.
So yeah.
Wild magic.
Wild magic.
No. So my last thought on draconic bloodline is just honestly that we do have a lot of flexibility with RP and descriptors. Thorn?
Oh, I like it. It's pretty well rounded, and it does give you a lot of room to put your own ideas in them, obviously. And I think it could be interesting to play. I mean, I haven't played a sorcerer in Lord knows how long, but I usually stick to the wild magic ones. But yeah, I might have to give it a shot sometime. And wild magic is next. So I really get a kick at the fact that the picture for the wild magic sorcerer is a dragonborn.
I know, right? And the picture for the picture for the draconic bloodline. Oh, they don't have one.
Nope.
But that's kind of funny.
Okay. So wild magic, your innate magic comes from the forces of chaos that underlie the order of creation. You might have endured exposure to raw magic, perhaps through a planar portal leading to limbo, the elemental planes, or the far realm. Perhaps you were blessed by a fey being or marked by a demon, or your magic could be the fluke of your birth with no apparent cause. However it came to be, this magic churns within you, waiting for an outlet. So wild magic surge is the first thing. Starting when you choose this origin at first level, your spell casting can unleash surges of untamed magic. Once per turn, the DM can have you roll a d20 immediately after you cast a sorcerer spell of first level or higher. If you roll a one, roll on the wild magic surge table to create a magical effect. If that effect is a spell, it is too wild to be affected by your meta magic. And if it normally requires concentration, it doesn't require concentration in this case. The spell lasts for its full duration.
Oh, that's cool.
That's my favorite thing. A sorcerer's for either one is just the pure chaos of it. Because if you can really mess some stuff up if you have to roll on that wild magic table.
Or just have a lot of fun. It's not messing up. It's just a little bit of chaos. What are we without a little bit of chaos?
Well, as everybody knows, I think chaos makes for good RP.
It does.
Yeah.
So, and who's to say, just like your draconic bloodlines, who's to say this wild magic search is nice?
Mm-hmm.
It could be painful. It could rip out of your body. It could do all sorts of things.
And oh, that'd be so much fun.
Yeah, you can make it real. Now, don't get me wrong. Rolling one is still pretty rare, but yeah, it does happen, especially at our table.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking about this. If we did a Domain of Dread campaign and had these body horror sorcerers going through, because I mean, imagine how depressing it would be. You know, you roll this one on the magic surge, and then, like Thorn said, it doesn't feel good. So you're there in the domain of dread. I'm like, all right, this is You start turning into Eeyore. I guess just this is my day. Yep.
It's not because like you got exposed to anything. It's like somebody had like a gem of pure magic and you like accidentally swallowed it when you were a kid. So like now it's like now it's just surging out of your body every time.
You licked coming out of your paint. Eyes.
Well, you could do it if you're doing like Domains of Dread, you could do it to where sorcerers are just tortured beings. And they're usually because their parents sold them into this life for some kind of benefit to their own. When they're children.
Like that.
That's nice.
So say your family, your parents have 15 children and you're the last one born, and they sell you to a sorcerer or one of these origins, and they have food for the family now. But you are now a sorcerer, this being that is a tortured soul for the rest of their life.
Riffing off of that, what if the magic was forced upon them? It wasn't that they were sorcerers to begin with. They didn't have any, like they were just regular kids. Mm-hmm. And you're building a magical army and you're forcing the magic. Oh, I like that. Ooh, I'm writing that down. moving on. Bone Daddy, you want to take the next one?
Yeah. So much like me, the Tides of Chaos. Starting at first level, you can manipulate the forces of chance and chaos to gain advantage on attack rolls. Or on one attack roll, ability check, or saving throw. Once you do so, you must finish a long rest before you can use this feature again. And any time before you regain the use of this feature, the DM can have you roll on the Wild Magic Surge table immediately after you cast a sorcerer spell of first level or higher. You then regain the use of this feature.
I like that little caveat at the end. Being able to force the Wild Magic Surge table, and of course you have to do it with a little bit of consent from the table, and you know, not be a complete dick about it. But if your table likes the chaos like ours does, rolling the Magic Surge table more often it's fun. You have to do it. I mean, I can't see why I would say like, oh, you know, I'm only going to let the Wild Surge happen when you roll a one. Like if that doesn't happen enough times, I think having it where you can make a plausible reason of why the surge is happening, do it. Roll the table. It's fun.
Yeah, I like that too. That the fact that the DM can force the table on you. I like it. To me, I like it just because it adds an extra bit of extra RP to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because just because it's the Wild Magic table doesn't mean it has to happen during battle.
Exactly. Meditating. He sneezed.
That's your fireball.
I'm not that mean. Maybe I am. So the next one is Bend Luck. Starting at sixth level, you have the ability to twist fate using your Wild Magic. When another creature you can see makes an attack roll, an ability check, or a saving throw, you can use your reaction and spend two sorcery points to roll 1d4 and apply that number rolled as a bonus or a penalty, which you get to choose, to the creature's roll. You can do so after the creature rolls, but before any effects of the roll occur. That's important. That last sentence, because if let's say an enemy crits on a character, you can apply a 1d4 penalty to that creature and lower it. Or if it just hits the wizard's AC, you could lower it by 1d4. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I said hashtag bless.
I don't know, man. I think that of this toolkit, like, I mean, the fun part is the Wild Magic Surge and the Tides of Chaos, but this is probably one of the best parts of the Wild Magic toolkit is just the ability to add or subtract a 1d4.
It's the manipulation. Damn near everything. It's the manipulation. You can manipulate almost every circumstance.
Yeah, and you can become the support role if you have to.
Yeah. And next is Controlled Chaos. At 14th level, you gain a modicum of control over the surges of your wild magic. Whenever you roll the wild magic search table, you can roll twice and use either number. Now that is awesome.
Yeah.
Because there's some things in there that you might not want to roll on.
Which we'll talk about. We'll get into the
table a little bit.
Not a lot, but
yeah. But any kind of control you can do over that, I think it means you're starting to be able to control where your magic comes from. So yeah. I think that's a good later level little item to have. So,
and it makes sense, right? Because it's 14th level. Like you've been a sorcerer for quite some time. Like you would think that you could get a little bit of control.
At least 3 days.
Yeah, you know.
Bone Daddy.
And then we have spell bombardments. So at 18th level, the harmful energy of your spells intensifies. When you roll damage for a spell and roll the highest number possible on one... when you roll damage for a spell and roll the highest number possible on any of the dice, choose one of those dice, roll it again, and add that roll to the damage. You can use the feature only once per turn.
Per turn. That's just... What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot.
That's funny.
That is fun. The opportunity for a... Well, what's the scientific term? I think fuck ton of damage. Yes.
hitting your rolls, man, you can take that damage so high.
Yeah. So final thoughts for wild magic. I mean, it is fun. I like the RP opportunities. I mean, my two favorites would have to be the Tides of Chaos and the Ben Luck. It's just, I think that if I was going to play a wild magic, I would have to work with my story weaver and say, hey, I want you to make me roll the surge table as much as possible. Just give me a reason. Yeah. Because that's kind of the whole point. Like, give me some chaos. I want that shit. Because, like, you know, looking at just one of them, because I just turned over to the table. If you roll a 9 or a 10 on the D100, you just cast Magic Missile as a 5th level spell. So in combat, great. You cast Magic Missile at 5th level. Like, that's awesome. Kill the baddie. If you happen to sneeze at a tavern and cast Magic Missile, guess what? You're going to have some issues.
Oh, no.
So wild magic, and to me, is so far of the sorcerers, it's my favorite. It's just the random chaos and stuff that you can manipulate. And, you know, you can be the support role. You don't have to be. You can, in this one, you could probably get to the front line pretty quick with some of the magic spells and just the wild surge table, because it can be as mundane as you cast grease centered on yourself or, you know, 1d6 flumps controlled by the DM appear in an unoccupied space within 60 feet of you and are frightened of you. They vanish after 1 minute. It's like, what? No. And then a unicorn controlled by the DM appears in a space within 5 feet of you and then disappears after 1 minute.
Some of these are so great.
But then there's one, you cast confusion, send it on yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it can really, you cast polymorph on yourself. If you fail the saving throw, you turn into a sheep for the spell's duration.
Yeah.
I mean, it can really take it out of you too.
Yeah. But I mean, hey, if you roll a 91 or a 92, if you die within the next minute, you immediately come back to life as if by the reincarnate spell. As a story weaver, I would at least, like, upon a death saving throw, I would make you roll the magic surge table just to roll it and see happens. You know, because that's a triggering event, right? You just drop to zero hit points. I feel like that would be, like, story-wise, there's a surge of magic before you knock yourself unconscious. And whatever that surge is, it is what it is. I mean, we're looking at, you know, some of them, if you're already at zero hit points, it won't matter. Like you being frightened by the nearest creature until the next turn. But, you know, if you get the 91, 92 where you die and reincarnate, or you and all creatures within 30 feet of you gain vulnerability to piercing damage for the next minute, surrounded by faint ethereal music. Like, imagine going down to zero hit points, rolling the surge table, and just getting hey, faint ethereal music is surrounding you for the next minute. Like, you literally just created your own soundtrack of dying. That's
your funeral.
Fun. It's your funeral. Like, hey, I'm sorry, but here's your music.
Bone Daddy.
Yes.
Final thoughts.
I really like the Wild Magic Sorcerer. It's one of my favorites to use. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy using Wild Magic. That's why in my game, we have a whole Wild Magic surge fiasco when that train blew up when I was playing.
Yeah.
So it's one of my favorite things to do when everyone got like 4 or 5 Wild Magic surges on them.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's fun. This one is a little bit quicker because we only had 2 subclasses to read, and it went by a little bit faster, I think. But we are going to get into Tasha's and Xanathar's on the next episode. And if we missed anything, shoot us an email, give us a review, share it with your friends. And I mean, that's it. That's the sorcerer subclass, right? Remember to check your dungeons because this dungeon is occupied.
Bye.
What's up, Weavers of the Realm? As always, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you haven't already, click that like button and subscribe or follow us on your chosen platforms. It goes a long way to help us grow. And if you liked the intro music that we just used, it was made with the help of The Hobby Hub on YouTube and Saturn Imaging Production Company. Also, if you want exclusive content like NPC of the Week, Discord access, and behind the scenes, join our Patreon at patreon.com/thisdungeonisoccupiedpodcast. And of course, the link to our merch store, social medias, and all the other podcast platforms are available on our link tree in the show notes. Good luck in your games, steal everything, and have fun.